This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Columbus Blue Jackets broadcast team, we're pleased to welcome to the program Blue Jackets analyst Jody Shelley. Jody, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, good morning. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Jody. A lot of news in and around the Blue Jackets organization earlier this week, and we'll get to the Sergei Bobrovsky stuff, but we want to start with the official retirement of a former teammate of yours. That's Rick Nash, who had earlier this season announced that he was taking a step away from the game due to some concussion symptoms and concussion-related issues, and then it was officially announced that his career has come to an end at the age of 34 because of those concussions. You spent a number of years playing with Rick Nash as a member of the Columbus Blue Jackets. What stands out to you the most looking back at your time with Rick Nash?
Well, I just think he was our superstar at the time, and he was the young kid who came in at 18, and he was just a kid. I mean, I remember, he was a guy that didn't know much about anything to do with the professional game and paychecks and sneaking in bars and all the fun stuff like that. But as a player, I mean, he was our all-star. He was a guy that we watched him grow right before our eyes. The records he has with the organization are still here. They're still standing strong. And I just think the weight that he had to carry being that number one winger, being that superstar for this team, it was just fun to interact and watch him go through and grow up and figure things out as he developed into a man.
Jody, as Drew mentioned, you played six seasons with Rick Nash in Columbus, and he's going to finish his career having played over 1,000 games and having scored 437 goals. But when you look at some of the seasons in which he didn't play a full season, and 730 goal seasons, 340 goal seasons, do you ever kind of wonder, how good Rick Nash could have been? Could he have maybe even got to 600 career goals?
Yeah, I think so. I think, he played with Andrew Castles here. Andrew was at the end of his career, and he was a great playmaker, but he never was a player that got to play with that elite centerman. I don't think even in New York he got to play with that bona fide number one centerman. He was a guy that they were searching to get that guy for him. I know it bothered him some nights not to be able to play with, or he'd get jealous of some other teams that had that big guy down the middle that complimented him so well. So he put up all those numbers on teams that didn't make playoffs runs, didn't have superstars to set him up or to take attention away from him. So think about that. He did that playing against the number one D. He was the focus, and he was a big guy that, you always think about Rick when he crossed the blue line and he'd go in backwards and use his size, and he figured out to get that shot away with that stick way away from his body. I can see it. He did it so many times. But he found a way to score goals with his hands way out in front of his body, and pretty impressive. I mean, those numbers are great, but you got to think it. He almost did it, I wouldn't say alone, but without another superstar with him.
Jody, speaking of impressive numbers, on Thursday night in a 4-3 win over the Predators, John Tortorella became the first U.S.-born coach to win 600 games in the NHL. What does achieving that record mean for him, and what has he meant for this Blue Jackets team?
Well, I'll start with the latter. This Blue Jackets team was a team that needed some direction and needed someone to come in and have tough conversations when he came here 4 years ago, and he did that. And, I love when he first came in and the first few years, he was always asked about the standard, setting the standard. And he would simply say, everybody throws around that word standard, but no one really has the gumption to stand in there and set a standard and stick to it. And, well, he's done that. And we've seen as recently as just 48 hours ago with Sergei Bobrovsky. So, he's done a lot of good things, and he set a standard and he stuck by it I really like the way he's cleaned up this team. He's a wonderful guy and a great coach. And the 600 games, it means a lot to John Tortorella. I mean, He's the first American-born coach to achieve that, 600 wins in the National Hockey League. You know, early in his career, he wouldn't acknowledge it. He'd shut it down and say it's about the team. But now that he's been around a long time and he appreciates those achievements and he understands not only what it means to him, but his family and the people that respect him and have been around him. So it's good on him, and he's looking for 601 here tonight in Washington.
Jody Shelley, Columbus Blue Jackets analyst, is our guest on the program. We're talking about a tumultuous week with the Blue Jackets organization. And Jody, you mentioned the hard conversations. Clearly one had to be had with Sergei Bobrovsky. It results in him missing the game in Nashville. Nobody's calling it a suspension, but, you know, I can call it a suspension. You know, how... You know, where does the organization go from there? You know, obviously he cleared the air with Jarmo Kekäläinen, and they say it's behind them, but this is a goaltender who's a pending unrestricted free agent at season's end. Is this really going to be sort of water under the bridge, or do you think there might be some lingering resentment from now through the end of the season or until the trade deadline, however it might be?
Well, I think the ideal scenario is Bobrovsky gets humbled. You know, he had to apologize to his teammates yesterday for whatever he did. You know, when you're in a family or you're in a team, if there's a certain level of dysfunction, or there's rallying points that you can rally around and feel better and tighter as a team, sometimes that's not a bad thing. And this sounds like it was a minor thing that Sergei had to be held accountable for and accountable in front of the world and the fans and the opposition, everybody. And so if he's humbled, and he comes in and falls in line, and it's not about Sergei Bobrovsky, then I think it's going to be a great thing. And, you know, what do I know? But I just know when you're sitting in that room and things pop up and you handle them together. And I just watched the way this team played the other night. The backup goalie was in, Korpisalo. They blocked. I mean, it was ridiculous what they did in front of them as a team. They rallied around not only the backup goalie in that situation, but Nick Foligno was out with a personal incident with his daughter, who had to have a major surgery. She's got a heart condition, and he came back. So we saw emotion. And, you know, I think they're going to start Korpisalo tonight against the Capitals. I think he earned that. And then Bobrovsky will go tomorrow. But I think Bobrovsky now, he messed up, and he's welcome back, and he's back with the team. He'll back up tonight, I think, and then they'll go from there.
Jody, how long has this been building for? I mean, you read about how in the playoffs at the last year where the Blue Jackets lost in the first round, and there had been suggestions that Sergei Bobrovsky maybe see a sports psychologist, and he certainly was not in favor of that idea, and he blasted that suggestion. So how long is this, I mean, I don't know if tension is the right word, but tension between Bobrovsky and the organization been building for?
You know, that's a great question. You know, goaltenders are unique. And I've played with Lundqvist in New York, and he is a part of the team, but there's an individual aspect to how he goes about himself and takes care of himself and his brand and his game day and everything. And that's fine. That's who he is. And I feel that when you do that, and I think Sergei's done that a little here, you separate yourself a little bit from the team. And there probably are points where you're like, all right, Sergei, let's go. You're on the bike for 45 minutes after a game, but the bus time, you know, doesn't need to be moved. We don't need to cater all the time to Sergei. And that's fine. That's who he is. That's how he prepares. It's a position that I know nothing about, but it's a position of a little bit of selfishness. So does it build? I don't know if it's been building or not. I just think that, you know, there's pressure on. We want to be paid like Sergei Bobrovsky. There's pressure that comes along with that and expectations, but you're also part of a team, and there's a part of that where I think that maybe he was getting away from that, and maybe that's what was building in this. But, you know, I think we all have situations and we all do things where we think we're doing the right thing to a certain point, and then sometimes before we really screw up, we correct it ourselves. So I think this is going to be corrected and has been corrected publicly. But yeah, I'm not sure how long it's been building. I mean, it's something that, of course, there's a lot of talk because of his contract situation. He's a pending free agent who's not talking to the organization at all, not helping in any way as far as being open to discuss teams or any of that. As far as I know, there's been no discussion. So that could create some tension, too, and not only in management, but I think in the locker room.
Jody, we want to ask you about Artemi Panarin, a.k.a. the Breadman, but I wanted to ask you about Josh Anderson, and it's not just because he's chucked the knuckles twice this year, and you, of course, were known for dropping the gloves when you played with the Blue Jackets and other NHL teams, and he had a good scrap earlier this season with Jamie Benn. I know that you've seen that one, and I was watching that game, but Josh Anderson's got 15 goals on the year, and he's on pace to shatter his previous high, which was 19 goals last year. But do you think Josh Anderson gets enough credit for the type of player that he is and what he's been able to do over the last several years with the Blue Jackets?
No, I don't think he does. I think, you know, he's a player that they protected over William Karlsson last year, who went to Vegas and set a career high with, I think it was 42 goals. And he had 7 in 2 years combined here in Columbus. So they protected Anderson because he's big, he's fast, he's got skill, and he can fight. You tell me one team that wouldn't take a player that's that prototypical power winger, and I would have a great argument with you, because no, he does some good things. I mean, the thing about Josh is he's been inconsistent. He can disappear earlier in his career, but this year he's gone to John Tortorella and said, "Listen, if I slip, can you just tell me?" And he wants to be better. He wants to be the full-time NHL impact player. He sees a guy like Tom Wilson, who he played against in junior. I think they played together in the Memorial Cup, and they might have even had a scrap in that. And, you know, he looks at Wilson. I think he looks at Wilson's success and his payday, and he's realizing that there's no chance that this guy should be that far ahead of me. So, you know, there's a role for those guys. There's always those – and then the guys especially, even if they drop the gloves twice, those guys are the guys that are a threat, and you know, people stay on their toes and in line with him in the lineup. So, no, he deserves more credit, and his upside is tremendous.
Jody, the question marks surrounding Artemi Panarin have been building all season, so we still, of course, don't know what's going to happen with him as trade deadline approaches. But, of course, there's a little fun earlier this week. High Bank Distillery put a billboard up in Columbus offering him free vodka for life. So are they having some fun with that in Columbus, and how do you see this playing out with his situation?
Yeah, they are having fun with it. And, you know, what a clever marketing to put that up. And you know, they just saved the soccer team in Columbus. There was a professional soccer team, the Crew, that was going to be leaving town. But they started on social media and really drove it. And now it's staying, and they're getting a new stadium. It's a remarkable story. So a little bit on the heels of that, the High Bank puts up this huge billboard. And Panarin actually goes out the next day and takes a selfie in front of it. And, you know, that's encouraging. I think it's a situation with him, again, where he's a free agent at the end of the season. I think everyone's holding out hope but expecting the worst, and that's that he's going to be moving on after this season. And but signs of that, where he goes and engages and is a part of it and understands what's at stake, and you know, it gives everybody a little bit more hope. So hopefully that is a good sign and not something that's going to come back and make it even sting more on July 1st. But we'll see how that plays out. But the town of Columbus is a great sports city. They understand situations. They respect athletes. And you know, I think Panarin he's found some chemistry with Cam Atkinson and Philip Dubois. Maybe that helps. Maybe if they go on a big run in the playoffs, it helps. But at the end of the day, he's got the right decision to be a free agent on July 1st.
Is it good vodka?
It's excellent vodka. It's all natural. So they make gin and whiskey. Yeah, it's excellent stuff.
There you go. That's the important. As long as they're not
Columbus, we'll go over.
Okay, as long as they're not selling them the swill that I drink, then that's the important part.
Yeah, Jody, could you send a Legal Curve some of that vodka, because we're pretty thirsty here.
Yeah. They got a little package called the Hat Trick. Maybe I'll send it up here.
There, we would appreciate that. Jody Shelley is a member of the Blue Jackets broadcast team. Jody, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a good call on tonight's Blue Jackets Capitals contest.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on.
Take care, Jody. When we come back, we discuss the Bobrovsky situation in Columbus. Pardon me. I forgot for a second what we were talking about. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
There's no sense asking. My answer is the release will speak for itself. And as far as the players, I've already told the players, there's no sense of talking to them. This will be handled inside. Yarmo and I will do the speaking on it if any more speaking needs to be done. But the release speaks for itself.
The release speaks for itself. John Tortorella talking to the media in Columbus about the issue with Sergei Bobrovsky.
Portsy.
That's so the new Brooksy is Portsy. That's Aaron Portsline.
Makes sense. You just added an E.
Yeah, you know, it's a hockey lingo. Any hockey nickname just ends in E. So.
Well, you're Mindy.
I'm Mindy.
Is
Z. What are you? You're Davey?
No.
No? What would you be? Why wouldn't you be Davey?
I'd be Mr. Minute to you.
Oh. My apologies. So you have to respect your, I have to respect my elders in the room.
That's
anyways,
right.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys, located at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. At Keener Jerseys, making a better jersey is just what they do. To have your jersey customized or to order jerseys for your rec team, go to KeenerJerseys.com. Keener Jerseys, they're on your team. Some really interesting comments, I thought, from Jody Shelley in that previous interview about Sergei Bobrovsky and about his future with the organization, about his standing with the organization. We know he missed the game of victory for the Blue Jackets, I should point out, against the Nashville Predators because of a disciplinary issue. They, you know, didn't say suspension, but it was a disciplinary issue that the Blue Jackets kept him at home. They said, you're not traveling to Nashville with us. You know, where does that relationship go from here? Bobrovsky is a pending unrestricted free agent. Can you see any scenario in which he comes back to the as a member of the Blue Jackets next season? Or do you think it ends before that? He gets traded maybe before the trade deadline to one of those goaltending desperate teams, as the Blue Jackets, though, are in a sort of a weird position where they're currently in a playoff spot in the Metropolitan Division.
Right, Drew. I don't think it's a question of whether or not Sergei Bobrovsky is going to remain a member of the Blue Jackets. I think it's more of a question of, as you just mentioned, is he going to be traded before the trade deadline, or is he just going to sign with another team? Because as far as I'm concerned, and as far as many people are concerned, this is Bobrovsky's last year with the Blue Jackets. And if he really wanted to stay, he would have signed an extension in the summer, right? Because the Blue Jackets were prepared to sign him to an extension. And by the way, I don't think that the Blue Jackets are actually going to be, you know, that poor off without Bobrovsky. You've got Jonas Korpisalo, and we talked to Brian Hedger about this a couple of weeks back. The Blue Jackets actually have many top goaltending prospects in the system, so I think Korpisalo will probably take over the reins from Bobrovsky next year, and then they're going to have several prospects, I think, competing for the backup role. Maybe you bring in a veteran or something like that. But no, Drew, I don't think that there's any chance. And as far as this most recent incident where Bobrovsky was upset that he was pulled from the game, it was against the Lightning. They lost that game 4-0. He was upset, and as you mentioned, he didn't dress for the team in that win against the Predators. But there's no way, guys, that Bobrovsky is coming back. And when you start talking about, you know, trading him before the deadline, I think it's very interesting when you start talking about what type of return the Blue Jackets could get. Because, as you mentioned, the Blue Jackets are in a playoff spot right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's possible that it's going to be a wild card spot. So it's possible that the Blue Jackets are going to play the Capitals or the Pens in the first round. And we've seen the Pens and Blue Jackets obviously play before in the first round, guys. But I mean, when you're talking about the Blue Jackets, this is a franchise that still hasn't won a playoff round, and there's a lot of pressure on them this year, because knowing that Panarin is most likely not going to be here, even though some people are starting to think maybe there is a chance that Panarin stays.
From the summer, where it sounded like he wanted to only go to a big city,
right?
You know, a market like New York or Los Angeles, or you know, somewhere with a lot of glitz and glamour. With
sure.
all due respect to Columbus, much like Winnipeg, it's not glitz and glamour.
Right.
It seems like that.
Unless you're at 441.
It seems like that relationship is thawing a little bit, that there's more of a possibility of Panarin re-signing in Columbus.
Right. It looked like at the beginning of the season that both Panarin and Bobrovsky were going to be gone, but now it looks like, you know, there still is the chance, as you mentioned, Drew, that Panarin's going to stay. But you know, if Jarmo Kekalainen and John Davidson offer Artemi Panarin $10 million a year,
he
stay? Well, if they offer him 7 years or 8 years at $10 million a year?
But he's going to get $10 million a year wherever he goes. So, I mean, it's does
Will
he want...
I don't know.
Well, I mean, he's going to get pretty close. It's Artemi Panarin. This is a...
Okay, so what if you give him an extra, you know, $1 million?
Well, remember, the determining factor was he wanted the ocean.
That's
so
right.
It has to be an ocean. It has to be an east or west coast team that gives him an ocean view.
That's what the talk was in the summer, is, you know, that he wanted to play somewhere that's got an ocean. Exactly. So
does he like to surf, or he just likes to be close to the ocean?
He likes the glitz and the glamour, and glitz and glamour and ocean are all tied together.
I don't think there's glitz and glamour around the ocean.
Well, Miami would have glitz and glamour. That's on the ocean.
Well, that's
Los Angeles, you know, has glitz and glamour. That's on the ocean.
But that's not because of the ocean.
Okay, but it's not because of the ocean, but
you're talking about geography here.
I'm going to talk about something else here very quickly.
What about the sand on the beach?
It's going to be the sound of me pounding on you as I pummel you into submission.
But back to Bobrovsky, though, Drew. Yeah. I really think it's interesting when you start talking about what they could get in return for him, because you got to think that Jarmo Kekäläinen wants a goalie back. Right, because even though Jonas Korpisalo could probably take over the reins, you'd probably want someone at the very least in a veteran backup role, and then you got to think that they'd want another roster player.
Who's in the market? Which team is in the market to pay a heavy price for a goaltender?
His
right
old
now?
Team.
What about Colorado?
Yeah, but his old team, Dave, can just wait. They don't need to upgrade their goaltending.
Oh, interesting. You mean for a trade?
No,
Philadelphia is a seller. They're not a buyer.
Right.
Yeah, Colorado. I mean, we talked Philip Grubauer.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know. I don't know if you realize how bad he was in Winnipeg.
I mean,
six goals on 20 shots.
We talked about it on Wednesday.
You know, maybe you give up. I mean, I don't think they're going to give up a Cale Makar. But maybe you move a guy like Grubauer I mean, you're not going to trade that number one draft pick.
But the Avalanche only do that if they think that he's going to put them into that upper echelon of teams in the Western Conference.
I think he could. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they're missing right now is a number one goaltender.
Well, maybe. I mean, certainly we saw Nathan MacKinnon was unhappy with Jared Bednar earlier this week after they lost again in Calgary, and MacKinnon, you know, immediately came out and apologized for his behavior. So that sort of seems less of a burning issue than obviously what we saw in Columbus. But I mean, if you're Jarmo Kekäläinen, you're not dealing from a position of strength because you don't have teams that are desperate for goaltending right now that are going to pay you a hefty price for it when they can just wait until July 1st and get the guy for, you know, just paying whatever the salary
is. What about Edmonton?
Again, but he's a pending unrestricted free agent. So does Edmonton give up a lot right now for a guy that can just leave after the season's end? I mean, you know, we know what rentals go for. And that's
if you're in the rental market, are you really a contender? If you're looking for a rental goaltender, to upgrade,
I don't think you are. No.
Yeah. So then the question is, why would you do it? The answer is you wouldn't. I mean, any smart GM is not going to say, well, we're that close, but we need a goaltender. Well, if you need a goaltender, you're probably in trouble. You're probably not a contender.
You're probably not that one goaltender
right.
away.
So,
exactly.
So we saw
St. Louis do it. Remember when they traded for Ryan Miller at the trade deadline a few years
right.
back?
Yeah.
And that didn't work at all. I think they lost in the first round still. Was that to the Blackhawks?
Rarely see, as you guys just mentioned, rarely see rental goaltenders.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate for Columbus because I don't think Columbus is going to get past the first round this year, whether they play against Pittsburgh or Washington. I just think those two teams are better. But having a goaltender who's clearly unhappy with his situation mm-hmm. and who plans on leaving after the season.
Yeah.
I mean, and Bobrovsky's playoff numbers just haven't been good. I mean, every year it seems like Bobrovsky regresses
in the
playoffs.
They were up 2-0 against the Capitals in the first round. They won both games in Washington.
Well, yeah, and then what happened?
They lost the next four, and Bobrovsky wasn't very good in those games.
And Braden exactly. Holtby got his net back.
And Braden Holtby took over from Grubauer, you're right.
And then Stella got her groove back. Stella got her Grubauer back.
You can't redo the joke.
It's technically not the fact, because Grubauer is no longer the goalie.
Yeah, you can't redo the joke after you tried it once, but it was a good effort. I appreciate the
Officer Bobrovsky.
Yeah, there you go. Jay Onwright. Worth pointing out, of course, Bobrovsky has a full new no-move clause, so if he doesn't want to go anywhere, and he doesn't want to do the Blue Jackets.
Well, did you hear
favor,
what Jody said? Yeah. Jody said that he wasn't telling them any teams, so that not talking with them, not giving them any indication as to teams.
Here's the quote from Aaron Portsline of TheAthletic.com, who covers the Blue Jackets. The relationship between the Blue Jackets and Bobrovsky's agent, Paul Theofanous, has been toxic for years, so that Theofanous might not wish to do the organization any favors by lifting Bobrovsky's no-move clause. So you have an agent who hates the team, you have a player who doesn't seem very happy with the organization, and you have an organization who's really between a rock and a hard place. If Bobrovsky says, this is my final screw you to the Blue Jackets organization, it's a hell of a way to go out.
Yeah, but it's unfortunate because it doesn't really – it's going to make you a problematic for the next team to sign you. I mean, if you think about it from that perspective, I mean, you're going to have to do a pretty good sell job on a team that's going to want to invest in you as the future of their team, as the backbone of their team in net, and you're doing that to your current team. So, I mean, you know, there's something to be said for being a team player, if you will,
yeah.
and not looking like you're trying to – put up these roadblocks? Because if you are, again, obviously at the end of the day, all that matters in the NHL is winning, and you know, sometimes they're willing to look past certain character flaws in order to achieve that goal. But the fact of the matter is that aspect of your character isn't going to be looked upon kindly, I would think.
I would agree with you there. When we come back, Josh Brewster is the Anaheim Ducks radio host. The Ducks, of course, are in Winnipeg tomorrow looking for a victory. Their first in 11 games. They've lost 10 in a row. We talk to Josh next about the Ducks and their struggles. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. The Jets and the Anaheim Ducks tomorrow afternoon. A game you can, of course, hear live on TSN Radio 1290. A 5 p.m. puck drop. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Josh Brewster. Josh is the Anaheim Ducks radio host. Josh, we promise to not ask the dumb questions, and hopefully Randy Carlyle won't get as mad at us as he did last night in Anaheim after the Ducks dropped their 10th straight game. Thanks for joining us this morning, Josh.
Well, thanks for having me, Drew, and guys. I'll tell you what, Devin and Dave, right? I'm trying to figure out who's who.
Ezra and Dave. I'm Drew. Ezra's going to be the next guy you hear from, and then Dave will be the third guy you hear from.
I'm the handsome one, Josh.
Gotcha. You got to send me like a Skype thing so I can see this on the video. All right, listen, anyway, I guess Randy last night faced a tough question from someone I know.
Someone we know as well.
Someone, this kind of happens when you lose 10 straight games. And it's an interesting situation because in the 15 games prior, they were 11-2-2. And then they go 0-8-2. And if they go out on the road and they go, 4-1, I wouldn't be surprised. It's a club that's dabbling in mediocrity. Sometimes they're good. On occasion, they've been very good. But they're all over the road, and when you're inconsistent like that, then a guy in Randy's position is going to have problems. The Ducks have a number of issues right now, and the execution on a nightly basis is at the root of it because there is a lot of talent on that roster, and so what we can talk about is the few major areas where things are going wrong.
Josh, and you mentioned that there's a lot of talent on that roster, and I'd agree with you, and we know how good John Gibson has been in net this year. Obviously, you can't trade all the players. So if it's a problem of, say, putting it all together, in a consistent package for 60 minutes, they were up 3-0 on the Pittsburgh Penguins last night, only to lose 7-4. Doesn't the focus just naturally shift behind the bench to Randy Carlyle? And were you surprised at the reaction he had? I mean, the question came from our good friend Josh Cooper, and Josh told me I can say that, I'm not speaking out of school here. But, were you surprised at Randy's reaction to what it seems like a pretty logical question at this point in time?
Well, first of all, I only heard it on someone's video recorder because I'm up getting ready for the show. I'm not standing there at that moment, so I'm upstairs. But somebody played it for me. Now, I got to tell you, I think we need folks like Josh to ask tough questions. And quite honestly, it's a little different down in Southern California than it is in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. I had Larry Brooks on the show recently. And I said, it would be nice to have somebody out west who asks a little harder questions. And long story short, in the age of bloggers, one thing you got to be careful of is a lot of bloggers, their only compensation is the credential from the team. Now, I'm not talking about Josh here, but a lot of bloggers will not ask the toughest questions because all they got is their credential. Now, in the case of Josh, I like Josh, and hey, I think you should ask the tough questions. But it's you can understand why it would rankle Randy. I totally actually I don't have a problem with Randy's reaction at all. And as a guy who supported Randy, and you know, I don't have a mandate from the club that I have to support Randy. But I have to support Randy, and it's just, I think it's an unfortunate spot now because I don't think he's asking them for a very complicated game. But there's something, here's what's going sideways. So I don't mind Josh's question, and quite honestly, I don't even mind Randy's answer, quite honestly. But anyway, I think that the execution of a quick game where you get shots off quickly and you're not playing on the perimeter all the time, you've got to have that now. You've got to have that in the NHL now. When you cross that blue line, the shots have to come, and they have to go to the goalie's legs, and then you look for rebounds. And rimming it around the boards and collecting the puck and taking too much time with it, you know, that's, I don't know, maybe a decade ago. Not now. And Randy will pay the price for that one way or the other. Whether it's just scrutiny and he keeps his job, or if he loses his job, he pays. But, you know, the coach is going to pay for that. And quite honestly, it's interesting how the Ducks started 3-0, because the Ducks, when the Ducks face an opponent who press, and I've been saying this for like a month, when the Ducks face an opponent that pressures them and makes them do something with the puck quickly, they are a far better team. That's the team that goes 11-2-2. When the Ducks hang on to the puck too long and do whatever they take 6-7 passes before they decide to shoot, they get killed because someone's going to turn the tables on them and go the other way. So it's that's the story of the Ducks, is that he doesn't know night to night whether they're going to get it, that they have to go to the slot, get traffic, get the shots off quickly, and instead of dusting it off and swinging it around the boards. And you know, that's going to fall in the coach's lap. But at the same time, you kind of know Randy's probably pulled his hair out trying to impart that message. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it does, Josh. And, you know, you mentioned 11-2-2, and we're talking about, you know, the Ducks having lost 10 games in a row. But, you know, a lot of people aren't talking about, even though they've lost 10 games in a row, they're only 1 point behind the Minnesota Wild for the last wild card spot. And obviously, yeah, you know, the Wild have the extra two games in hand. But when you look at the Wild and the Avalanche, I mean, the Avalanche have only won 2 of their last 10 games.
Yeah.
The Edmonton Oilers, the other team right now who's chasing the Ducks, they've only won 3 of their last 10 games. Is the best news for the Ducks and Ducks fans that even though they've gone on this horrible losing streak, they're still right in the thick of the wild card race.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple things. First of all, you know, I oftentimes have to throw out what I grew up in NHL and in early 80s NHL, okay, or mid-80s, early 80s. And throw out the idea of who's good and who's not, because I remember a time when the Washington Capitals, the Detroit Red Wings came to town, and it was a W, and that was the end of the conversation. You had to really screw it up to lose that game. I mean, you had to really play badly. The bad teams were horrible. Well, it's a lot harder now to discern who's really good and who's really bad. I mean, there's some clubs that are really struggling, but at the same time, you know, I think things can turn very quickly in the salary cap NHL. Pittsburgh has had its moments earlier in the year. You mentioned Colorado, et cetera. Don't be surprised if the Ducks get it for the next half dozen games, and then don't get it for the next half dozen games. And they're not a bad club. They're actually a good club. It's just they're not a very good club. They're not a great club. But I think things change very, very quickly in the parity, in the age of parity and the salary cap.
Josh, one player who hasn't been in the lineup for the Ducks is Corey Perry, of course, who's been out. He had MCL surgery. They gave him a 5-month prognosis. I understand he spoke for the first time on Thursday. It's got to be frustrating for him. What's his road to recovery looking like right now? And, you know, won't he be quite the nice shot in the arm for Anaheim when they get him back?
Well, it's interesting that his name has fallen off the radar on my show. And, you know, a lot of folks have pointed out, well, I think he gets 17 and 19 goals in his previous two seasons, whatever. You know, it's an interesting situation. You know, I love him as a player. You can see that things have diminished in the last couple of years, but I have faith in that player. And, you know, the way the Ducks are right now, the way that they're horrible in shots on goal, that's Corey Perry's game. They're horrible in the goal-scoring department. That's Corey Perry's game. So, look, even if Corey Perry's a 20-goal guy or 25-goal guy right now, the Anaheim Ducks desperately need those 11 goals he would have by now. And And I still believe, and I believe he's even actually capable of much more. Sometimes a guy gets, you know, an injury reprieve, and even though he's dealt with an injury, sometimes it's not the worst thing that ever happened. You know, we saw what happened with Teemu Selänne after the lockout. So I have a lot of faith in the player, and I think that he still knows how to get to the right areas of the ice. He had a huge series against Edmonton a couple years back in the playoffs. And the thing is, you know, you can't be blaming injuries. At the same time, what the Ducks need right now is, look, Ricard Raquel was injured for 13 games. Sadly, he comes back and he's still one of their top shooters. I don't know how that happened. That's how bad they are in the shooting department. Their top shooter is ranked like 143rd in the National Hockey League, which is Brandon Montour. Raquel has to get it going. Adam Henrique has to do something. And Nick Ritchie has to do it more on a nightly basis. And Andre Kasha has been good, but he needs to do it more often. And then you get Corey Perry back. But the thing is, they have a lot of ifs. And they have a lot of guys up and down the lineup, not to mention Kessler and Cogliano. Cogliano had an assist, big play last night. And assist. Kessler is having such an unfortunate run. He's almost, I think, 28 games with like one assist. I mean, that's just horrible. Could you imagine? I mean, you're Randy Carlyle, you're dealing with all this, and you don't want to bench a guy like Ryan Kessler. He did a great job against Sidney Crosby last night. You know, you got problems where, you know, Kessler, Henrique, Cogliano, Raquel, they're all having down years, and that's the guts of your lineup.
Josh Brewster is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Anaheim Ducks, the Ducks into Winnipeg to play the Jets tomorrow afternoon, a 5 o'clock puck drop. And Josh, you sort of addressed it in that question about the lack of goal scoring and the lack of offensive punch. The Ducks second last in the NHL in terms of goals for. Where does salvation come from on that topic? Is it coming, or is it just maybe you hope that those players who are having uncharacteristically down years so far are able to maybe turn it around in the second part of the season?
Yeah, well, you've got to hope for a turnaround. Otherwise, it's just a down season. Because the thing is, I've mentioned so many names that for me to sit here and say, oh, they turn it around, they finish strong, and then they go tearing through the playoffs. How likely is that? I mean, how likely is it that they're as good as the Winnipeg Jets? You know, I mean, they may beat them Sunday. Wouldn't surprise me at all if they beat them Sunday. But how good are they? You got Nashville out there. You know, and it's funny, they've knocked off teams like Tampa. They've beaten the Capitals. They've beaten the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, you know, it's interesting. There's so many names on this list. I'm a big believer that every single roster spot has a quota of goals. Okay, if you're a top-line player, it's got to be like, you know, 20 to 50. If you're a second-line player, it's got to be, you know, 15 to 25. Third-line player, you get it, you know, 10 to 15, you know, 10 to 15, somewhere in there, maybe 20. And then the fourth-line guys, maybe a great fourth-line player gets me 8 to 10 goals, if he's lucky. So the best player on the Ducks, aside from John Gibson, is Kiefer Sherwood. I mean, Ryan Getzlaf has had, a tremendous year at times. But Kiefer Sherwood, their fourth line right wing, is actually their best forward. Because in his role, he's got 5 goals and he brings it every single night. But that's a sad statement when that guy, that role is filled and all these other roles are less than productive. So, you know, I think there's a lot of guys in the Ducks gripping the stick too tight because the ability to finish and make really fine plays, it seems to be waning now in this losing streak. Like these guys are pressing. And it's a lot of key guys, you know. You know, when I'm talking Henry, Kessler, Cogliano, Raquel, it's just a whole bunch of them. And when you have that many, you're in big trouble.
Josh, last question for you here. In early December, the Ducks traded Marcus Pettersson to the Pittsburgh Penguins for Daniel Sprong. And Sprong is a former second-round pick of the Penguins, but he had no goals in 16 games. In 16 games with the Ducks, however, he's got 6 goals. Why has it worked out so well for Sprong in Anaheim?
Well, he's getting ice time. He didn't have any ice time in Pittsburgh. And it's a trade that works for both teams. You know, one thing about the Ducks is Bob Murray has drafted a lot of good defensemen, a lot of them. You know, I mean, look at all the teams around the league that have former Ducks prospects like Shea Theodore, Jake Gardner, Justin Schultz. There's a lot of them out there. And so the Ducks always have defensemen. That's part of the Brian Burke philosophy as well. Have lots of defensemen. They're the most valuable asset. But Daniel Sprong and what Pontus Aber, who's been scratched, and what guys like them, what they represent to the Ducks, and you've seen a lot of them cycle in and out of here, is the Ducks are putting a leash on their prospects. They're really, really trying to show some restraint, impressing guys like Troy Terry, Sam Steele, and then next year they can bring in Max Comtois, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, Max Jones. There's a bunch of prospects in San Diego who are now ripe and ready for the plucking, and the Ducks are smart to keep them away for a couple years, okay, past their 20th birthday or whatever. And I would predict right now that guys like Sprong and Rowney, and there may be a bunch of guys in there, maybe some even loftier names who may be jettisoned before the trade deadline, I'm guessing, in favor of some late-season pull-ups from San Diego. I personally believe the Ducks should stay away from the trade deadline and work on mixing their prospects in, because, you look at a guy like Jake Guentzel on the Penguins, I have a feeling the Ducks have a Jake Guentzel or two. And they're waiting in the wings, and I think it's time to press them into action.
Josh Brewster is the Anaheim Ducks radio host. Josh, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Always a pleasure. Let's talk in the near future, and let's see where the Ducks are at, because they're so up and down. Maybe we'll have an up to talk about.
Sounds like a date. Thanks again, Josh.
Thank you, guys.
When we come back, more on the Jets versus the Ducks, and we look ahead to Tuesday's Western Conference final rematch against the Golden Knights. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
We had a lot of chances. We just couldn't find the back of the net. And I think a few of these games, we have been playing well and we have been generating chances, but we're just not finding our side on the winning, on the winning end of it when we come out of it. So, everybody's looking for answers on how to come out. But at the end of the day, I think we did some good things tonight and we came out to a good start.
That was Josh Manson from a couple games ago, Anaheim Ducks defenseman. They may have done some good things, but they didn't win the game. As we now know, the Ducks, their losing streak has extended to 10 games now. Winless in their last 10 games. They have taken three of those games to overtime to get at least 1 point out of them, but 10 straight defeats for the Anaheim Ducks. Ducks into Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon, late afternoon, to play the Jets, a 5 o'clock puck drop. And, of course, then Tuesday night, the Jets with the Western Conference Finals.
It's 5 o'clock... Like, I realize
late afternoon or early evening, it's your call.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, it is. Like, because I realize that it's technically afternoon.
I don't think there's any technicality. I don't think there's ever been official...
Before 6 is afternoon.
I don't know. Is that official? Is that
it's
ever
not
been
nighttime.
No, it's not nighttime, but it's evening. So it's... I mean, where does evening start and when does afternoon end?
I just think 5 o'clock is the afternoon anymore.
Dave, arbiter of all things useless, where would you fall on this one?
I'm not going to lie. I heard you two babbling and I kind of tuned you both out.
We're
but
discussing is 5 o'clock
I wasn't actively listening, but I picked up enough to know what you guys were talking about. I would go with 5 o'clock as an evening game.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Surprised.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
that's why
I don't think you can say that's an afternoon game.
I say late afternoon. I mean, I didn't say afternoon. Afternoon.
True, you should know as someone who goes for the early bird special that is not available after 5 o'clock.
I think if it's a 4:30 start, that's the end of the afternoon.
4:30.
I almost think, this is for speaking, from someone who works in an office. For me, as soon as it hits 4:30... 4:30 is the end of the afternoon. Once it hits 4:31, that's the evening.
Are you the official spokesperson for all office-employed people?
I'm speaking for the Manitoba Labor Board.
More importantly, I've never heard someone reference 4:30. That's a very specific time. Like, I would say...
That's
like,
when I work till.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, must be nice.
Yeah, someone's got some banker's hours over
Holy
there.
Dina.
Even the bankers work longer hours than that.
Sometimes I stay, till 4:45. But
yeah, if you fall asleep and you wake up and it's after 4:30, you stay till 4:30.
Drew's talking aggressively. Yeah, Drew leaves at 4:45.
Anyways, the segment of the show, and God help them, is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh-frozen food delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com or check them out right in the store itself, located in the Cordon Village Mall. All the information available, bernsteinsdeli.com. The Anaheim Ducks, you know, clearly in a tremendous tailspin. Randy Carlyle feeling the heat, lashing out when asked about his job security after the game last night. You know, they were up 3-0 on the Pittsburgh Penguins. You have John Gibson in net. John Gibson has been the only reason the Anaheim Ducks are anywhere near a playoff spot so far this year. He's been incredible in goal for the Ducks. And they end up losing 7-4 to the Pittsburgh Penguins on home ice. The Jets are going to face an angry Anaheim Ducks team. So I think they're definitely
dangerous.
They be angry? I would assume they'd
angry
be angry.
Coach.
I would hope the players would be angry after losing 10 in a row.
They might be hangry if they don't eat.
They should go to Bernstein's Deli before they head to the game tomorrow night, obviously. But, I mean, I think they're a dangerous opponent for the Jets tomorrow. But at the same time, this Anaheim Ducks team is struggling to put the puck in the net, and things have really gone from bad to worse in Anaheim so far.
Yeah, and there's only one team in the Western Conference who has scored less goals.
In the entire NHL, the LA Kings.
Right. And so when you're talking about the Ducks, I mean, they've still got a lot of dangerous players. And, you know, Josh Brewster touched on this. I mean, Rickard Rakell is a guy that has been very surprising to me in a bad way. I mean, this is a guy who has been a regular 30-goal scorer over the last few years, right? Yeah. And he's only got 5 goals. And, yeah, sure, they miss Corey Perry, guys, but Corey Perry coming back is not going to solve all of their problems. I mean, I look at the Ducks team, and I think right now there's kind of a mixture of veterans and younger players. And, you know, Ryan Getzlaf's actually having a nice year. He's leading the Ducks, obviously, in points, but still strong up the middle with Kessler and Henrique. And, you know, we talked about Andre Kasha on the Wednesday show. Andre Kasha under a very favorable contract for the next 3 years for the Anaheim Ducks. And I've always liked Jacob Silverberg's game. And, you know, they're very solid on the back end and with Lindholm and Fowler, and really like Josh Manson. You mentioned John Gibson, Drew, having an excellent year for the Ducks. But for me, it's really that secondary scoring and even the primary scoring that has let them down. I mean, Ryan Getzlaf has never been a goal scorer. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, every year he kind of has, you know, 15 goals, 50 assists, 15 goals, 60 assists, that type of thing. But, mm-hmm. you know, guys like Silverberg and Rakell, I mean, you just expected more offense out of those guys. And as I mentioned, I mean, a guy like Corey Perry, he might come back as early as March, but I don't think Corey Perry is going to turn this team into a contender.
No.
Can they still sneak into the playoffs? Sure. But if the Ducks sneak into a wild card spot here, Dave, and they end up playing Calgary or Vegas,
doesn't matter.
I mean, Calgary and Vegas, they're just much better teams, more well-rounded teams. And so, I mean, tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow evening, whatever you want to say, between the Jets and the Ducks, it's not going to be an easy game for the Jets. They're obviously a more skilled team. But this is a trap game in the sense that the Ducks are in desperate need of ending this losing skid. They want to. They're going to be a desperate team tomorrow.
And I think the Jets, I mean, you mentioned it being a trap game. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, obviously, I think the Jets have the game against on Tuesday against the Golden Knights, the Western Conference final rematch, maybe circled on the calendar a little bit more as a more significant contest against the Ducks tomorrow. So the Jets have to be careful not to overlook the wounded animal that is the Anaheim Ducks in anticipation for the game on Tuesday against the Golden Knights, the last home game before the player break and the All-Star break, and then they start on the road. So this will be the last game on Tuesday night at home to the Golden Knights that we'll see the Jets for the next couple weeks.
Right, but I don't think the Jets are in any position to be overlooking teams at this point. I don't think that they're playing such good hockey that they could say, hey, we're just cruising past teams. We can afford to look past anyone. So I think the reality from the Winnipeg perspective is, you know, we won it against the Red Wings. We didn't have our best game. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't play our best game on Thursday. You know, the Jets should probably be a little bit of an angry team right now. They're not playing their best hockey. They need a better effort from, you know, right across the board, I think. Well, not from everyone, but from some players, as we've talked about throughout this program. So I think the Jets need to start to kind of get at their focus and not, you know, that's a big mistake, I think, if you start looking past teams. And I think that would be to their error if they did. So I think that, you know, from a Jets perspective, you got to really look at this Anaheim team, as you said, coming in angry, and you got to take them seriously, and you got to handle them and play a full 60.
Yeah, and, you know, even though I don't think any NHL team guys plays a strictly heavy game, Anaheim is one of those heavy teams, right?
Sure.
You think of guys like Nick Ritchie, you think of guys like Hampus Lindholm, Carter Rowney, Josh Manson is a guy that likes to play the physical brand of hockey. So Ryan Kessler is another guy.
They're not a speed team by any stretch.
No, they're not a speed team. So, you know, expect a bit of a chippier game tomorrow, I would say.
I would agree with that. When we come back, we look ahead to Tuesday's contest against the Vegas Golden Knights, the Western Conference final rematch. Jesse Granger covers the Golden Knights for TheAthletic.com. He joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, the muscle man himself, Dave Minuk. For some reason, he's posing here. Why are you posing?
I don't know. I just felt like it.
Okay, fair enough. It was a little odd and random, but Dave posing for, I guess, the pleasure of us in the room.
You have the wrong phone number for Jesse Granger in the show plan.
I apologize. I thought you sent it to me, so I'm not sure how I did that.
I'm actually getting ready for the flex cam today.
The flex cam? Is that something they do at the Moose games?
Yeah, they do the flex cam.
Okay, the Moose games tonight against, Phil, help me out here.
Laval Rocket.
Thank you. And it's Military Appreciation Night.
Military Appreciation Night. And more importantly.
Yes.
A lot more important.
Dave Bobblehead Night.
No, I'll be joining Mitch Peacock in the booth.
There you go.
A little color analysis.
You can hear that game on moosehockey.com.
Pre-game starts 5:45.
There you go. Aren't you just full of the plugs and
You may even read a note, too, of Illegal Curve's morning papers. You'll see a little.
Just be careful or we're going to pull the plug on you.
You've been wanting to do that for years at this point in time.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com in Las Vegas, he covers the Vegas Golden Knights. His name is Jesse Granger. Jesse, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem at all. Always like coming on with you guys.
We appreciate it, Jesse. Obviously, the big Western Conference final rematch on Tuesday night here in Winnipeg. The first time this season that the Jets and the Golden Knights will make each other's acquaintance again. You know, this Golden Knights team started slowly, but really since Nate Schmidt returned from his performance-enhancing drug suspension, they've been absolutely on fire. Is this the Golden Knights team that everyone sort of expected to see sort of just keep building from where they left off last year when they made that incredible run all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals?
Yeah, they've played much, much better. And the good news for the Golden Knights is they still haven't been 100% healthy through this stretch. They can't seem to get their top six all healthy at the same time. For a while, it was Max Pacioretty out with an injury. Paul Stastny missed a lot of time. They finally get both of those guys back, and now Riley Smith is out with an injury, so now Pacioretty's had to move up to that top line. We haven't been able to see their top six at full strength, but it's hockey, and that happens. You'd like to see what they can do with all those guys, but they're definitely playing a lot better, especially on the defensive end. They're suppressing other teams. They're one of the best shot suppressing teams in the NHL. Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't been super busy. When he is, he's been his usual self. He's going to be in the All-Star game, and rightfully so. So yeah, they're playing a lot better.
Jesse, we have to ask you about a great story that you had in The Athletic. You actually had several great stories in The Athletic this week, but the first one we wanted to ask you about is Max Pacioretty, and he had a couple of game-winning goals last Friday against the Anaheim Ducks and against the New Jersey Devils last Sunday, 6 days ago. But in between those two games, there was the birth of his fourth baby boy. And just how fun was this for you to write the story? And how nice of a story is it to see a guy like Max Pacioretty back in the lineup, healthy, and you know, scoring a couple of game-winning goals between the birth of his fourth baby boy?
Yeah, it was a really cool story. And I love telling stories like this, kind of allows the fans to see that these guys are just guys, just like the rest of us. They're all in Anaheim, and Pacioretty, when he gets to the rink, he always turns his phone off. And his wife was assuming going to go into labor that day while they're playing in Anaheim, but he still didn't want to change his routine. He turned his phone off when he got to the rink. He plays the game. He scores the game-winning goal. He gets back to his locker, checks his phone as fast as he can, and his wife had a few hours before that sent a text saying, hey, I'm headed to the hospital now, so get your ass home. And he tells his buddies, all the teammates in the locker room, well, his teammates in the locker room jump in the shower as fast as they possibly can. They're throwing their bags on. They're helping the team staff get them under the carts. They're throwing them into the plane themselves, hurrying as fast as they can. They fly back to Vegas. They've got a guy waiting at the airport to drive Pacioretty to his wife's hospital, and he makes it just in time for the birth of his fourth baby boy, so that was awesome. He spent that whole night at the hospital. I think the baby was born at 2 a.m. He didn't sleep the whole night. He has to go home the next day and find a way to feed his other three kids. He joked that that's not his strong suit, making dinner. And then ended up playing in another game the next day on only about 3 hours sleep in 3 days and scored the game-winning goal in that one. And it just kind of shows you that I think we forget sometimes these guys have lives outside of hockey, and everything they do is not just hockey. And it's pretty amazing that they're able to perform like they do on the ice with all these other life events going on around it.
Well, Jesse, speaking of things that are going on in hockey, I mean, you wrote about the history or the future of hockey and how it's upon us now because the NHL is, for the first time in history, microchips in shoulder pads and in the puck to test and kind of revolutionize the game. So just what kind of impact will this have on the game, and what can fans expect from this new technology?
I think it's going to have a huge impact. I mean, they're hoping to roll this out. I talked to Commissioner Gary Bettman, and he said that the hope is they roll it out at the start of next season. So this is very soon that we're going to have this technology. And right now, in an average NHL game, we track about 350 events in a game, from shots to hits to blocks to every stat you can possibly think of. There's about 350. Once we start using this technology, it'll rise to about 10,000 events tracked per game, which obviously is an insane change. And for guys like me who, I mean, and my colleagues at The Athletic, we love analytics. I'm sure you guys love looking at analytics. And we've got Corsi, we've got Fenwick, and then we can kind of go to Corsi per 60, but there's only so far that can take you. Once you start keeping stats like how fast guys skate, a constant track of who's in the defensive zone the most, who's in the offensive zone the most, to me, the most exciting stats that are going to change are goalies, because there's no positions it's harder to judge based off statistics than goalies, obviously, because all we have really is goals against average and save percentage. Once you start tracking the speed of the puck at all times, we're now going to be able to easily pull up stats on how the average speed of shots that goalies let in, the average speed of shots that they save, the average distance of goals, all of that can be readily available with these microchips in the puck and all this technology. So I am pumped for it. I think it can fundamentally change the way we decide who are good and bad hockey players and who are good and bad hockey teams.
Jesse Granger is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jesse covers the Vegas Golden Knights for TheAthletic.com. Jesse, you know, Brandon Peary has been a house on fire since he's joined the Vegas Golden Knights. 7 goals, 4 assists, 11 points in only 9 games played for the Golden Knights. Why? I mean, this has been a player who's had some success, but he's generally been considered a streaky player. Why is he finding success right now in his stint with the Golden Knights?
Yeah, he's a streaky player, but he's always been a goal scorer. I mean, he had the 20-goal season for the Rangers, and he hasn't really had a chance to play a full season in the NHL. His biggest problem and the reason he hasn't been a regular NHL player is his work on the defensive end. And I talked to him when he was in Chicago in the AHL back, I don't know, a quarter of the way through the season, and he told me, I got that moniker as being bad at defense when I was 19 years old. It's unfortunate. I've been working to kind of shake that. And this year he really focused on the defensive end. He got called up. He's done nothing but score in pretty much every game since then. It's still that defensive end that he needs to work on. The interesting thing, though, is they've been sending him back and forth because he's waiver exempt, but tonight they play in Chicago against the Blackhawks. And if he's on the roster, that will be his 10th game, meaning he's no longer waiver exempt, which will pretty much guarantee he is a regular NHLer for the rest of the season, which is obviously what most of the fans in Vegas want, just because he's become such a fan favorite with all the goal scoring. But it's good. It adds some scoring to the Golden Knights' third line, because we all know their top two lines can score with the best of them, but their third line has been pretty inept at scoring. And if you can get the top six healthy and put Peary on that third line, it gives you so much more depth.
And Jesse, you know, speaking of the third line, you know, Ryan Reeves is obviously on the fourth line, but you know, Jets and Golden Knights are going to play on Tuesday here in Winnipeg, and as you know, Ryan Reeves scored the series-winning goal in the Western Conference Final, and when he was signed to that two-year, $2.775 million a year contract, many people thought that maybe, you know, George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon were crazy, but he's got 8 goals this season and 15 points. I guess it's funny how you know, things change, you know, after half of a season, but, you know, how good is that contract looking now for the Golden Knights?
Yeah, I mean, he's still bringing what everyone assumes Ryan Reeves will bring, which is he's the enforcer. He brings a lot of big hits. He intimidates the other team. He just got in a massive fight with Adam McQuaid, which if you guys haven't watched that fight and you like hockey fights, go watch it right now. It was one of the best hockey fights I've seen. But he's scoring, and he's obviously, he already has a career high in goals, and we're barely halfway through the season. And he's doing it because Gerard Gallant's putting him in spots he's never been in his entire career, whether it was in St. Louis or Pittsburgh or wherever. He's never been put as that net front presence with legit minutes and on the power play. Before this season, I think Ryan Reeves had played 3 total power play minutes in his entire career. This year, he's on the number 2 power play unit every game. Pretty much from the beginning of the season, he has been on the number 2 power play unit, and obviously Ryan Reeves is not, even with his 8 goals, he's not exactly a scorer, but he's a big body, he's tough to move out of that net front presence, and he's just been had a knack for finding loose pucks and rebounds and jamming them home. He's playing out of his mind offensively.
Jesse, on New Year's Day, it was announced the Jets would be playing an outdoor game next season in Saskatchewan. Of course, the day before, you wrote about the first outdoor game in NHL history, of course, which was played in Las Vegas, I believe in 91. It was an exhibition game. How much fun did you have writing that story? You talk about the fact that you get to go a little more in-depth, getting a chance to talk to Wayne Gretzky and writing that story for The Athletic.
Oh, that may be the most fun I've ever had writing a story in my career, just because of, it's such a cool story. I think most people, even really big hockey fans and hockey fans, people that have watched hockey their whole lives, may not know that the first outdoor game in NHL history happened in Vegas, and it was a preseason game between the Rangers and Kings, and they played it at the outdoor stadium that at Caesar's Palace that used to host the Muhammad Ali fights, and Foreman fought there, and pretty much
WrestleMania 9, I believe, as well.
Yes. So they built this, they extended this stadium and built a rink out there, and yeah, I got to talk to Wayne Gretzky, and the story that everyone that I spoke to, whether it was Robitaille, Gretzky, the guys at Caesars who run it, everyone, the thing that they went to was the fact that the ice was accidentally melted the morning before because they had frozen this ice 2 days before. And we're talking, the temperatures were about 95 degrees during the middle of the day for the 3 days that they had to keep this ice frozen, so they put a tarp over it to protect it from the sun. And when they're pulling it off, the tarp off, the morning of the game, the crew didn't show up. There were supposed to be 12 guys to help take this tarp off. Only one of them showed up, and he thought, I can do it by myself. He cuts the ropes. Well, the tarp was like 200 degrees Fahrenheit, and they drop it onto the ice. It was described to me as like dropping a hot iron onto ice. It cut through it about as fast as it touched it. So now they're sitting here with 8 inches of standing water, and they have about 6 hours until they're supposed to be playing a game there. So obviously they went into panic mode. They turned the chillers up full blast, and they ended up getting it frozen just in time for the game. They played. The game went on pretty much without a hitch, and everybody loved it. Gretzky talked about even him. He was in awe of the atmosphere and getting to play at the same spot that Muhammad Ali fought. It was just a really cool event.
That's a great story. We'll send out a tweet about it from our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve, but it was a tremendous story, Jesse. Jesse Granger covers the Vegas Golden Knights for TheAthletic.com. Jesse, thanks for joining us this morning. We always appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, Jesse. When we come back, will a potential World Cup of Hockey in 2020 be the catalyst for an extension to the current collective bargaining agreement? We'll talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
One final segment, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This final segment is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Kelly Taylor will have two shows at 7:15 and 10 p.m. Both shows last night sold out, so if you want to see Kelly Taylor, you best get your tickets at RumorsComedyClub.com. And of course, remember, a special Sunday show with Kelly Taylor coming up tomorrow. That one will be a little bit dirty. It's a special quote-unquote dirty show, so if you want to see some maybe off-color humor, if you're not easily offended, maybe the Kelly Taylor Dirty Show is for you. Tickets available for that and all upcoming shows at RumorsComedyClub.com.
And I assume he'll shower after the show and he won't be dirty anymore.
He's not physically dirty. I think the language will be dirty. Yeah. But as far as I know, his hygiene will be still be good.
Like, he's going to brush his teeth and he's going to shower before the
show. Yeah, he might even wash his hair. He's got a big, thick beard. I'm not sure what the beard grooming is going to be, but possibly he's going to do something about that. Maybe something more than what you're currently doing.
Well, I've got the big beard going right now, and I actually put shampoo in my beard.
A very important for you thing for you to do there, Dave. Now I'm bringing Dave in, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't want to confuse the audience.
No, that's fine. So I got a tweet from Scott McLean. Scott is in from Atlanta. He's a Jets fan who's from Atlanta. There's still a number of those former Thrashers who've converted over to being Jets fans.
Yes.
And he tweets at me, "My boys and I made it to the Red Wings game last night. They'll be in Section 111 for the Moose game tonight and Section 219 for the Anaheim game." So what I'm getting at is that there's a number of folks who come from Atlanta and they make the pilgrimage up to Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And I think he's here. Scott was saying, I think he's up with four or five guys who made the trek, and they're here for, which is a good time for them because they're here for all the Jets games, all the Moose games. We've got seven games in a row. Last night was two of seven straight at Bell MTS Place. So we've got tonight against the Moose, and then, of course, there's a few more coming up.
I guess the question is he going to be wearing a Slava Kozlov Thrashers jersey, or maybe he's going to be wearing a Passy Nurminen jersey? You remember him, of course.
Yes, me and Passy were very close in our day.
Former goalie for the Thrashers.
Yes. Yeah, Brian Little. Yeah.
Brian Little.
Maybe a Sean McEachern. Remember him?
I do remember Sean McEachern.
Yeah.
Do you have any other? Maybe a Ray Ferraro?
Actually, Joe Piscucci. I got to give
Todd White?
Yeah.
Got to give now retired Joe Piscucci a shout out. Oh, sorry.
Well, one more. JP Vigier.
Yes, certainly. Are you done?
I could be.
Okay, thank you.
Got to give Joe Piscucci a nice little. Well, I'll give JP Vigier a shout out too. But Joe
played for the Thrashers.
Dave, by the way, the show will be over before Ezzy lets you finish your statement.
Yes, I clearly. So the point is that Joe is a, even though he's retired,
yes,
and living the good life,
yes,
he is a fountain of old Jets or pretty much any older clips of hockey games. And so Brian Little was asked yesterday, because he of course got his 500th NHL point yet last night with that third goal of the game, and he was asked about his first NHL point and if he remembered it, and he said, "Yeah, I kind of remember it. That goal was a lucky play where I was in Atlanta and I was driving the net and I threw the puck back and it went off a defenseman's skate and into the back of the net, and that was his first NHL goal/point. And of course Joe Piscucci mashed it up and managed to find Brian Little's first goal and mashed it up with his 500th point. So
yes.
I think Joe Piscucci is always a good follow because he always has really good video from back in the day.
Yes, we do recommend you follow Joe, of course, on Twitter, and you might as well follow us on Twitter while you're at it. Individually, sure. I mean, as a collective, we're at Illegal Curve. I'm at IC Drew. Dave, you are at IC Dave. And Ezzy is at IC Ezzy G, because he feels he's important enough that he needs his last initial included in there as well. But to your point, Dave, about the folks up from Atlanta, you know, if you see him at the Moose game tonight or you see him at the Jets game.
Well, I won't be able to talk to him tonight, but
fans in general. Yeah. Welcome them, give them that friendly Manitoba welcome that people are so accustomed to. So you can do that when you see them at the Moose game or at the Jets game tomorrow evening.
What was this segment supposed to be about?
It was supposed to be about the upcoming potential that the World Cup of Hockey will be a catalyst into either a brand new collective bargaining agreement or an extension of the current collective bargaining agreement. Most people were anticipating 2020 of being another NHL lockout, because that's usually how it works. Anytime there's the CBA expires, there's either a lockout or a strike. I mean, a lockout for more often than not. But it seems like they're making some traction seems like it, you know, with negotiations between both sides, because it seems that...
Amazing what money will do.
Well, I mean, frankly, there's no reason for there to be a lockout. Players are getting paid. The owners seem to be making money as well. So I'm not sure what a lockout would, you know, the negotiation would be about. But the consensus is, from both sides, the NHL and the NHLPA, is that in order for there to be a World Cup of Hockey in 2020,
right,
there needs to be an extension to the collective bargaining agreement. They don't right. want to do what happened in, right. Was that 04,
yep.
where the World Cup of Hockey ended
remember
on...
Remember that trophy?
It was ugly.
Like it looked like a lamp or something.
Yeah, well, the World Cup of Hockey ended and then the lockout began the next day. They don't want a repeat of that, so they're negotiating to see how they can maybe extend the CBA or come to an agreement on a new CBA that will also result in a World Cup of Hockey in September of 2020.
Right, and I don't know if you guys saw player agent Anton Thun's comments.
I did. It's in the show plan as well, but go on.
Well, I mean, I don't always read your little links in the show plan, but when you're talking about, you know, the World Cup of Hockey, I agree with Anton Thun. I mean, why do the two have to be linked, right? And, you know, there are going to be some major issues, Drew, as you know, in the collective bargaining agreement. I mean,
what are they, though? Both sides are making money hand over fist. Players, the best players.
I think you just answered your question. That's going to be money.
Well, but I mean,
how to divide it, how to generate more of it.
Is it going to be, it's going to be, I mean, they're not going to come up with an agreement where it's less than 50-50. I mean, it's hard to believe that the owners would have enough chutzpah to do that. Actually, it makes sense that the owners would try to do that. They have enough chutzpah on its face, but ultimately it's 50-50 right now, and 50-50 is mostly
right. I don't
fair.
Think it's going to be the percentage distribution of the revenue. I think you're talking about more so contracts and how long terms are going to be. And
so it's escrow. I mean, the players don't like escrow. So if the
that's
going
to be one of the issues, if, escrow.
And yeah. escrow is the percentage of each paycheck that is held back
right.
so that to ensure that the hockey-related revenue stays at 50-50. So if you're a player and you don't like escrow and ownership comes to you and says, well, we'll get rid of the escrow agreement, but instead you're going to only have to accept contracts that are no longer than 5 years in length. Players aren't going to do that.
Signing bonuses was the other one.
I know. Lots more to come on, of course, the CBA. It seems like both sides are making a lot of money right now. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Big thanks to our guests, Jesse Granger, Josh Brewster, Jody Shelley, Greg Wyszynski, and Jeff Hamilton. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on our website, IllegalCurve.com, on TSN1290.ca, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Alex behind the board. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.